For members only, Golf Smarter number 302, published on October 11, 2011.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Shoe stores wouldn't sell just one size. Why do golf shops?
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Okay, so this is actually the first of our two recordings, but welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Tom.
Thanks very much, Fred. I appreciate the invite, and it's always fun to talk about golf clubs.
And it's fun to talk about it with you. I mean, I've talked about it with other people, but you are so passionate about this, and it's so important that people understand the importance of custom club fitting, that I don't think there's a better spokesperson on the planet than you. Not the least of which are the number of books that you've written. We can talk about those. But you're just so passionate about this topic because I think ultimately your goal is, I want to help each golfer improve.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, admittedly, this is a hard game. You know, it takes some skill, you know, to be able to learn swing technique to the point where you can hit the ball reasonably well. But at the same token, when you talk about people who played some sport, you know, when they went through school, you know, and had some proficiency in the sports they play, you know, the game of golf is not so hard that you shouldn't be able to get to a point where you can get all your shots airborne and start to enjoy the game. And it was a number of years ago as the golf industry, the mainstream part of the golf industry, began to get more and more competitive for sales because there were more and more golf companies competing to sell golf clubs to golfers. Things were changed on the standard made clubs sold off the rack, which really started to make the game more difficult for golfers to play. And these things started to get in the way of a golfer being able to play to the best of their ability. I mean, the biggest thing in this is that, you know, it's really been interesting. I've always been a historian in the game. You know, so I know a lot about the game's origins, and especially the origins of golf club design and all this stuff. You go back to when the game began to really grow. It's in the first era, the late 1800s. If you wanted to go buy a set of golf clubs, you had to go to an individual custom club maker shop, and he would size you up. Now, granted, fitting technology wasn't very much back in those days, but he basically sized you up, and he made your set of golf clubs. You didn't buy them off the rack or anything. It was only when the game began to really grow in popularity, you know, and more golf courses were built, and the golf courses then developed little pro shops and had teaching pros, then the teaching pros said, hey, to the club makers, they said, hey, can you make me a bunch of sets of clubs that I can put in my little shop, and that way I can sell them to the golfers? And that began the business model that we live with today, which is what we call standard off the rack. The golf club companies pick a series of standard specifications for their golf clubs that are based on national averages. And they build those golf club sets to all those average specifications. And the only thing that differs is you can choose from different shaft flexes. Okay? And then they get built into pre-built sets. They get sold into the retail stores. They get put on the nice display racks. People walk in. Somebody sizes it up in about 10 minutes, says you need an R-flex, and here's your set. But they don't think about things about what about the lengths? What about the lofts? What about the lie angles, face angles, or the others of the 13 key fitting specifications? And golfers have never been led to believe that they should have anything different than what they just buy off the rack with a choice of shaft flexes. Common sense point on this is really what's driven my passion. You know, you go out to a golf course, you go out to a busy driving range on the weekend, and you look around and see, what do you see? Are all those golfers the same size, same strength, same athletic ability, and the same swing characteristics? No, we're all different, like fingerprints. You know, and so you sit there and say, okay, how can this population of golfers that are so different in size and strength, athletic ability, and their swing characteristics, how can they all hope to play to the best of their own unique ability if they're all going out to buy golf clubs that are made to the same specifications with only a choice of shaft flex? You know, for this, it doesn't add up, but yet in the whole marketing of golf clubs, the marketing points towards the technology of the new design of the club head or the shaft. And they say nothing to the golfer about, you need a different length, you need a different swing weight, you need a different shaft weight, you need a different this, you know, all of the 13 different key specifications. And so golfers are blindly drawn in to the marketing of the technology behind the head design chiefly, and don't even think about the things that are important that other people who play stick and ball sports have been familiar with for years. You know, and what I mean by a stick and ball sport.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
This,
what do you mean by that?
You know, I mean, most people at one point, you know, played baseball or softball, and a lot of people play tennis. Okay, these are all the other big sports that we play where we use an implement to hit a ball, and where the success in our sport is measured by how well we can use that implement to hit that ball consistently where we want to hit it. You know, with this. Now, you look at bats, for example. You go into any sporting goods store that sells bats, and you see all the different bats from the companies and the models. They're all on racks. But what's different is they're all commonly stocked. Those bats are all commonly stocked in different lengths, different weights, different handle diameters, because those are the three key fitting specifications for a baseball bat. You take any baseball player and walk him into a sporting goods store where all the bats are the same length, the same weight, and the same handle diameter, like the way golf clubs are, and a baseball player will walk right out. He says, I can't use that, you know, because he's learned he has to be custom fit to the bat that matches his size, his strength, his athletic ability, and how he swings at the ball. And from that, he gets the best results in hitting the ball, playing baseball or softball. Tennis is no different. All these, you look at premium tennis rackets, you know, in a sporting goods store. They're all stocked in different grip diameters, and it's marked on the side of the racket. And you won't find a premium tennis racket with strings in it. And why? Because all the tennis players know that they want to pick the type of string and then the string tension that matches how they swing at the ball and their power and force that they hit. Custom fit. No tennis player who plays the game seriously would ever walk in and buy a racket pre-strung. They will specify what they want for their fitting specifications, you know, with the grip diameter, the type of string, and the string tension. You know, and what's kind of funny in that thing, too, is that in a tennis racket, string tension is their equivalency to what shaft flex is in a golf club. In the tennis industry, the string tension is all completely standardized. It's done in pounds per square inch of how much you stretch the string. And so if you walk into a tennis pro shop, you know, in California or New York or Texas, and you say, I need this kind of string and I need it strung at 55 pounds per square inch, that's what you're going to get, and it won't vary. But in the golf industry, when you say, I need an S-flex, well, there is no standard in the golf equipment industry for how stiff any of the letter code flexes are on a shaft.
Really?
So from one company, an S-flex from one company can have the same stiffness as an R-flex from another company or an A-flex from some other company.
Wow.
Because, and I know this for a fact because I worked in the 90s to put together a committee under the ASTM to try to establish a series of standards for shafts. And we had something like 35 guys from different shaft companies and different golf club companies all sitting there. And we had six meetings over the course of 3 years at various golf industry trade shows trying to come up with a series of standards for four different measurement point parameters on golf shafts. After the sixth meeting, the chairman of the committee from the ASTM threw up his hands and said, I'm disbanding the committee because you guys won't come up with a compromise to agree on standards. And the point was, either A, each one of these companies wanted the standards to be their own ones that they had established for their companies for shafts, or they didn't want standards at all because they didn't want golfers to really know how stiff or what these shafts, how they were made anyway. You know, and I just, you know, I look at these things, and now that I'm 60 years old with 30-some years, you know, in the golf design and golf equipment business, there are certain things that just make me want to pull my hair out. You know, and one of the biggest ones is just simply the fact, you know, that it's tragic that so few golfers understand that if you're different from the next golfer out there, how can you both go walk in and buy a model of golf clubs that is the same for every one of these specifications with only a choice between shaft flexes, and you don't know how stiff that shaft flex is anyway because there's no standard for it in the industry. You know, and then people go out and you know, the other part that's curious, you know, all marketing for products has claims with it. you know, let's say like, you know, computers, for example, they'll give you, you know, the RAM size, you know, the processor speed, you know, and all these kinds of things. Cell phones, they're going to give you, you know, 3G, 4G, all this stuff. Automobiles, they give you the horsepower, the mileage, you know, all this kind of stuff. And if you go buy a car, a computer, or a cell phone, and if it doesn't perform to the claims advertised, you take it back and you get your money back. Okay, with a golf club, here's all the marketing saying, use this XYZ model, you'll hit it 10 yards further or you'll hit it the straighter. So you go buy that golf club, and if it doesn't do what the claim said for you and how you play, you walk back to the golf course, you know, to the place you bought it, and what do they tell you? Golf's a hard game. Go take some lessons, you know, then you'll hit it better.
Yeah, it's your fault. It's not the club.
It's your fault. It's not the product's fault.
Well, first of all, congratulations that you still have hair at 60 to be pulling out. What is the ASTM?
ASTM is a national organization based out of Philadelphia that basically establishes standards for every kind of product.
Oh, really?
You know, so, you know, if it started back when they were building the Transcontinental Railway, you know, and the railroad needed so much railway track that they were relying on, you know, 15, 20 different steel companies to make the railway, you know, the rails. Well, they'd come in and they'd get rails from one company that were soft and deficient, and they'd fall and they'd bend and all this stuff. And so finally the government stepped in and said, we need to create an organization that sets standards so we have safety, if nothing else. And so over, you know, the course of 150 years or so, the ASTM has pretty much stepped into every kind of industry there is to try to help these industries develop standards, you know, for their products or services even, you know, with this. And so when you say ASTM standard number XYZ and all this, you know that this has all been verified, you know, and things are set up under a series of standards, and as, you know, you get what you pay for. You know, then, in other words, and but golf has rejected it. Japan has it. You go over to the Japan Golf Association, and in Japan, they have an organization there called SG, which can go to all the golf club companies and verify your standards, you know, for all this. And then in return, you know, you can put the little SG mark on the golf club, you know, but the U.S. doesn't, the U.S. golf industry doesn't want that.
Unbelievable. I'm really impressed how you got rail in there, because that's what you've been railing right all along. I'm curious, because when you talk about how on the baseball bats, I don't see millions of dollars spent saying that Prince Fielder or Albert Pujols or Sean Kemp uses this baseball bat. But in the golf industry, the amount of money that is spent marketing which players use these balls or these clubs is so influential to the average golfer out there who doesn't understand why they need to get fitted for clubs.
Well, I might laugh a little bit about that and say that if you've got people like Prince Fielder in the game of baseball who are being paid these insane salaries, you know, of $8 to $25 million a year, and you're a bat company and you walk up to them and say, can we use you in our, you know, in selling our bats? It might be kind of scary what their agent's asking for.
Good point, because they're not going to sell that many bats.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not going to be able to justify that expense.
But at the same token, you know, I mean, in the wood bat business, you know, of Major League Baseball, you know, Louisville Slugger, all these companies, you know, they make these bats with the player's name on them, you know, burned into, you know, into the yeah, the large portion of the bat, the barrel bat up there.
Sure, and
you know, so when you buy a Prince Fielder bat, it is a certain length, it is a certain weight, and it is a certain handle diameter. Okay, and if that fits you, then you now know that your bat fitting specifications are to play a Louisville Slugger Prince Fielder bat. It's kind of how they use it. But all baseball players too, if, you know, they know, well, I play a 33-inch bat or a 33-ounce bat. You know,
right,
things like that. So there are specifications that they dictate, you know, were they to change from one bat brand to another so they could get the same thing.
And you said there are three key specs that work for baseball bats, but you mentioned 13 key specifications for a golf club.
Yeah, therein lies the fact that because there are 13 key specifications for a golfer to be fit for his custom fit golf clubs or her clubs, that's the reason why the golf equipment industry works on a standard off-the-rack basis. Kind of like if you opened a shoe store and you had all the different styles and colors of shoes, but all the men's shoes are in a size 10 and all the women's are in a size 7. Doesn't fit? Just try it on. You'll get used to it. You know, kind of thing like that. And because with 13 different specifications, no golf club company could make all the different options. It'd kill them from an inventory standpoint. And the retailers who stock the golf clubs would never order all the different options.
Well, that's where I was thinking about, because, you know, we have done some work with a retailer in the past, and I know that they had their website, the design of their website was so difficult because they felt there was so much customization that they had to do for every club that was ordered online. But their customization was type of shaft, right or left-handed, right, and length. I mean, if they even did length at all.
Yeah. No.
And that to them was, so I would think on the retail side that retailers, again, you talk about stocking inventory, they just couldn't handle everything they need.
No, I mean, I have experience in that. I mean, back when I was vice president and in charge of all product development for Golfsmith International from 93 to 2001, during that time was when Golfsmith started to develop their big, huge retail golf store chain. And I had to sit in on a lot of those meetings, and that also caused me to pull my hair out when I'd see, you know, how that whole business was done. You know, it's a tragedy to golfers out there. It really is, and I hate to yammer on so much about it, but, you know, in the business of selling golf clubs, you have these big golf club companies, okay? They don't control the distribution of their golf clubs, okay? If you open up a golf store across the street from mine, they're going to sell you the golf clubs, even though I'm stocking them. They're not going to protect me, because as long as you can pay your bill, they're going to ship you their clubs, okay? So that means you're selling the same clubs I'm selling. Standard off the rack, same brand, same model of all these different golf club companies. So who's going to get the sale, me or you? Whoever gives the lowest price. You know, and so now you got a situation where all these golf retailers aren't making enough profit to be able to have really good training programs for the salespeople who sell them, really good salary programs for the salespeople who sell them. So they get a huge amount of turnover on the sales staff. And the salesmen, you know, are people who play golf and, you know, they tell you what they think and they just don't have the ability to fit you, you know, for this. And I sat in meetings at Golfsmith where I heard the managers of the stores tell people, I can't have you spending more than 15 minutes making a sale on these golf clubs because we're not making enough money for you to spend any more time with that customer to do it. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's one of the reasons I get really passionate, because golf clubs, it's an expensive purchase. You know, I always look at purchasing things on the basis of, if I have to go out and buy something like a high-def TV or a computer or some appliance, I don't know much technically about them. I hope like heck whatever store I walk into that I'm going to run into a person who is very compassionate and knowledgeable about that product, and he's not going to take advantage of me and sell me what he's got or tell me I need something I don't need, you know, all this. And so I know golf clubs better than anybody on the planet probably, you know, and so this is why I keep working trying to write books, write articles, talking podcasts like yours right here to get this word out about here's how the golf club business works. And here's what you golfers who want to play this game as well as you can, this is what you need, custom fitting, you know, for each of these 13 specs. So in a long drawn out one, the 13 specs, what are they? See, I don't have my list in front of me, so tell me if I get them all right here.
If you're not going to get them right, I'm not going to get them right.
You have the length of the golf clubs. You have the loft angles on the golf clubs. You have the lie angles. You have the face angle on the woods and hybrids. You have the shaft flex. You have the shaft weight. You have the shaft's torque and balance point. You have what's called the shaft's bend profile, which is how is that stiffness distributed between the tip, middle, and butt ends of the shaft. You've got the grip size and style. You've got the total weight of the golf club. How much does it weigh when you put it on a scale in ounces or grams? You have the swing weight balance. How much can you feel the head? You have what we call the set makeup of the clubs in your bag. What are they going to be? How many hybrids versus irons? how many, you know, fairway woods versus hybrids versus irons, the set makeup. Then you have, you know, within all that, you know, the club head's design. Okay, and is that center of gravity or moment of inertia or face design or size of that head good for how you play? So I think that adds up to 13. And those are when you go to a really experienced individual custom club maker, they're going to go through a very methodical process to do measurements and swing observations and then use their training and use their experience to pick out what each one of those 13 specifications needs to be for you, for your size, your strength, your athletic ability, and most importantly, your swing characteristics.
Wow.
And that's something you can't deny. I mean, one of the saddest things where I kind of, you see me cringe here is, you know, in the golf equipment industry, you know, my concept of this thing being a longtime club designer and being very much into the physics and the science of golf club performance, all the brand new, off the rack, instantly better scientific technology in golf clubs is used up. Hmm. It's gone.
Well, don't they have a lot of rules that they have to follow because of the USGA as well, right?
That's part of it. That's part of it. The other part of it is the fact that you have such a short product life cycle for standard off-the-rack golf clubs. You know, each one of these big-time golf club companies has to bring out a new model at least every year, if not every 6 months. Mm-hmm. Because you've got five companies in the golf equipment industry who together have something like over $3.5 billion with a B in sales. And so if you happen to be a $700 or $800 million company, to make that much in sales every year, you're going to have to sell something like 500,000 drivers, 800,000 fairway woods, 250,000 sets of irons every single year. And so you just plain saturate the market with a new model in a year or less. And so one-year product life cycles have used up new technologies faster than they ever did before. Go back into the 80s and the 90s, golf company brought out a brand new model. It lasted at least 2 years and probably three before they ever brought out another one because it took that long for that model to saturate the market and sell to as many golfers as who were going to buy it. Not so today when you've got such large companies out there and with the pressures they have where four of these five largest golf companies are publicly traded with, you know, grave responsibilities to their stock price, you know, out there. So that's used up the technologies. The USGA, as you have said, has enacted rules since 1998 on equipment which have limited this technology. And as a result, there really is only one real scientific performance technology in a golf club that the vast majority of people have never, ever experienced and most don't know it exists. And that is custom fitting.
Right.
You know, right there. And that's the interesting. I mean, everybody, this is what's so great about it. You know, all of us, when we look at our golf clubs, we say, God, I wish I could buy a golf club that I could hit 10 yards farther, or I'd only, you know, fade it like 15 yards instead of 30 yards, you know, that I could hit more solid more often when I swing it. And so because we want that in our games, that makes us susceptible to marketing, okay? So the marketing comes out and says 10 more yards, you know, hit it straighter and all this stuff. And so you say, that's what I need. I'll go in, you know. And so you go in and you buy it, but you don't get custom fit for the right length, the right loft, the right lie angle, the right face angle, all these 13 specs that I mentioned to you, and you go out and you don't hit it any better than you did before. And you say, you know, I guess I'm not a good enough golfer, or I guess I got fooled one way or another. Well, okay, I'm talking about custom club fitting. My own sense, that's marketing, okay? So I'll put myself in that boat with all the other ones. But one thing I know from having taught club makers for so many years and been only working in this custom club making side of the industry is that pretty much I can say this. If you happen to be a golfer and your handicap is somewhere between 12 and 26 and you've been playing with clubs you bought off the rack, I don't care whose name is on them, how much you paid for them or anything, but if you bought them in a big golf store or a pro shop and you're a 12 to 26 handicapper, you've probably got an 80% chance of hitting the ball farther, straighter, and more consistently if you go see a custom club fitter.
80%, 80.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we joke around in this industry because we know the golfers and their habits so well. I say, you know, between 12 and 26 handicap, because these are the golfers who make mistakes in their swings, for which the custom fitting specifications can offer a reduction in that problem or even sometimes eliminate it, you know, for that. The hardest people to fit in this game, you know, to have them walk away and saying, wow, that's better instantly, are like the scratch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 handicappers. And the reason is because what is it they have that in the beginning makes them a scratch to a 4 handicapper? Athletic ability.
Mm-hmm.
They have tremendously good athletic ability, so they've learned the swing characteristics faster and they can repeat them and duplicate them. Okay, if you have that skill, you can pretty much take almost any golf club and adjust to it and hit it reasonably well. You know, and so for these guys and women, you know, who are really, really good, what their custom fitting comes down to is to be able to fit them so the feel of the golf clubs, maybe the weight feel, the head weight feel, or the shaft bending feel, is exactly what they want and what they prefer and have gotten used to in a good golf club for them. You secure that feel for them in the golf clubs, now their confidence is better, and from that, they can maybe be a little bit more consistent. That's typically how the fitting success goes for the very, very good golfer. For the average player who makes the swing mistakes and slices the ball or hooks the ball or hits it too high or hits it too low or, and makes these swing errors, they're much easier to do a fitting and have them walk away with an instantaneous improvement in one way or another of how well they hit the ball, you know, for this. And that's why, you know, I've always joked around with some of the custom club makers that I've taught, you know, and I said, you know, if I ever got out of the research and development side of this craft and I actually went into the business of hanging up a shingle to be a custom club fitter, you know, in a town somewhere, up on my sign outside my door, I'd say, Tom's Custom Club Fitting, golfers from 12 to 26 handicap only. You know, and the reason is because I love success. And all day long, you know, it's the 12 to 26 handicappers, when they go get custom fit properly, they walk out instantaneously having some form of improvement that they can experience, see, feel, or touch in how they hit the ball.
So when you say 80% will 80% chance of improvement, not that 80%.
No, 80% of those golfers will walk away with their custom fit golf clubs with something being definitely better than it was before.
Okay.
That might be more distance. It might be better accuracy.
Right. What are the metrics on that? I mean, like, how can you say what will be improved, how much improvement? You can't quantify, can you?
Not until we see their clubs that they're currently playing with now and until we go through the measurement and the analysis of their swing.
I'm going to throw something out that's kind of wacky, but I've been known to do that. Let's say those 12 to 26, which is probably the bulk of all golfers, correct? We know that there are the elite players, the four handicappers, the guys that are scratch and under, so let's call them single digit handicap and better. They probably know that they should be custom fit, and they probably are custom fit. If they're dedicating that much of their time and their life to the game, they know that much improvement. They need little things to make that much more improvement. So let's go back to the 12 to 26. And I know that the USGA doesn't make a set of rules for the average golfer and for the touring pro, but actually that's been disproven over recently with the wedges. But what if for 12 to 26 handicappers, the USGA said, you know what, we're not going to have any restrictions on any golf clubs at all. Go out and spend anything you want, do anything you want. And club makers can make any kind of outrageous designs with a, you know, 18-inch club face. I mean, just anything at all. If they can do anything at all, are their scores going to improve?
I don't know that their scores are going to improve. Well, let me put it this way. You know, I mean, you know, with all this controversy that's come up here more recently with all the number of wins on the recent PGA Tour events with belly putters, this has reawakened all the traditionalists in the game to say, ban the long putter, ban the belly putter. You can't have anything anchored to your body, you know, and all this. It makes it, you know, too easy to do this.
What is the ruling with that? Because I always thought, wait a minute, that's not supposed to be able to touch your body, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's why I think the point is, does it really make you make more putts? You know, and I've had this discussion. I understand now that this particular topic of banning long putters or belly putters or not, this falls into that category my father warned me about many years ago of encountering people whose minds were already made up, so don't confuse them with the facts. You know, as well, unfortunately, the facts are this. The long putters have been around for 20 years. Okay, how long did it take for somebody using a long putter to win a major tournament? 20 years. How many tournaments over that 20-year period of time, you know, have been won by golfers who switched to a belly putter? Not very many. You could pretty well count them on both hands, you know, with this. You know, what's more than that is, you know, I'm a long putter user because I have injuries in the hand and arm that I have the yips, and I just can't keep a conventional putter calm. You know, so for me, it's custom fitting for mistakes or things in my body to use a long putter. Okay, so I can at least play the game, but I can absolutely guarantee you that I can pull and push short putts with a long putter just like I could do with a conventional one. And the other disadvantage, and you ask anybody with a long putter or a belly putter, do you have the same sense of stroke feel for the distance of the putt when you start getting to 30, 40, 50, 60-foot putts? That's much more difficult to acquire with a long putter than it is a conventional putter because the putter is anchored to your body. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I know there are people out there may listen to this and they're traditionalists and they say, that shouldn't be done. Well, it doesn't provide any advantage. It doesn't replace skill with technology. You know, to play the game. You know, that it's just a different way to putt, and you can consider it no different than custom fitting the putter to the type of stroke or the athletic ability of the golfer for putting, you know, out there. So, anyway, I mean, I understand that it can be an emotional issue with some people who really feel that tradition is important to the game. I do, too. But if you want to take that debate even further and say that we need to ban everything that replaces skill with technology, then you would ban any change in a golf club. All golf clubs would have to be the same length, the same loft, the same weight, and all that. And that's pretty much where we're at with golfers buying standard off the rack. But the rules do allow custom fitting. And in a sense, you could say, if I give you a closed face angle driver to reduce your slice, I've given you a technology that replaced your skill in being able to swing the club on the proper path to the ball. But we okay that. So, you know, I mean, those are just some of the quirky things, you know, that go along with the game because humans have been involved in running the way the game is played.
And when the manufacturers have to come up with something new every 6 months or a year, and let's just say it is 6 months because of the product cycle, and you know, they've got to convince people that, yeah, now is the time you have to buy a new golf club, and yet they have so many restrictions, what kind of differences do they make in their clubs so they can make claims saying that this is the new and improved and different and better club than it was in, you know, before the season started?
Well, if you've noticed over the last 2 or 3 years, the big club companies are starting to kind of toe-step and dabble in the area of what they call custom fitting.
Mm.
What I'm talking about is the adjustable hosel or the movable plate on the sole. You know, with this where you can rotate the position of the shaft so that you can change the lie angle or the face angle. You can also, like in the TaylorMade driver, where you rotate the little triangular piece, you change face angle by how it makes that head sit when you put it on the ground with this. So they're trying to dabble in a couple of areas, in two areas of the 13 key fitting specifications, but the fact of the matter is, you know, those adjustable hosel drivers are still 46.5 inches long. They're still made with one type of shaft weight. They're still made with shaft flexes that you don't know how stiff that RRS really is because there are no standards. One kind of grip, one kind of swing weight. They're still standard off the rack. And what's more, it's only one club. It's a driver. You've got 13 in your bag. What about being custom fit for the other 13? Or being custom fit for the driver for the other 11 important fitting specifications with this. So it's custom fitting, but I call it using the term ersatz custom fitting, which is cheap imitation thereof, because it isn't really custom fitting. It's trying to say it is to draw more people in, when in reality what they're doing is still being done within the handcuffs of the business model they have to work within, which is to be able to ship pre-made clubs to retail stores so they can be sold off the rack. Not built one club at a time for one golfer at a time to their size, strength, athletic ability, and swing characteristics.
Amazing. Oh, Tom, thank you. I'm exhausted. You must be too.
Well, you give me a chance. Let me just add one quick thing here, Fred.
Please.
And that's if anyone has been listening and they're interested in talking to a custom club fitter to see if that's worth pursuing, you got to find a custom club fitter who's good.
That was my next question. That was what I was going to wrap
up
with.
I'm going to be the first guy. If I'm out here lobbing dirt bombs, you know, at some of the big companies and criticizing how they're doing their business, I'll take one back in my face. Okay, here. And I'm going to tell you right now, there are people out there that golfers will find who say they can build a golf club. And what I'll say is there are club makers and there are club makers, okay? And so to find a good club maker, someone who's experienced, certified, trained, and can do the proper job, three places I'll tell you to go. First one is go to Google and put in AGCP, Association of Golf Club Fitting Professionals, okay? Go to their website. Or the other one is International Clubmakers Guild. Go to their website. Both of them have listings of their certified and accredited custom clubmaker members. These are the two main professional organizations of custom clubmakers and custom club fitters. Okay, so these guys are the best of the best. Okay, The other one, my company, wishongolf.com, we maintain a list of the custom club makers that we have screened, or I have personally taught, or we personally know to be skilled. And through our Find a Club Maker link on wishongolf.com, you can also get hooked up with somebody who can steer you in the right direction for being able to analyze what you need in your custom fit clubs.
Well, when you talk about club makers, you know, there are good ones, and then there are others that don't necessarily pass the test. You know the old the answer to what do they call the person who comes in last in his medical class?
A doctor.
Exactly. Tom, thanks so much. That was awesome.
Fred, my pleasure. It's always fun to talk about golf clubs because it is such a great game.
And we'll continue to bring back some of my favorite guests for our 300th anniversary. And next week, we share the first of two episodes with Catherine Roberts of Yoga for Golfers. And just to let you know, over the next few episodes, we'll get a chance to speak with Jesse Ortiz from Bobby Jones Golf. Comedian Matty Blake will present his season-ending Matty B Awards. And John Novosel, inventor of Tour Tempo, will share with us his latest product. Now, before you write me, yes, I have sent my request to Fred Shoemaker to see if we can get him back, but we'll both keep waiting and see what happens. So keep your fingers crossed and stay tuned to the Golf Smarter podcast. If you have any other requests or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.